Once I got over the fact that my Latin teacher was a horse, we had a nice tour, though I was careful not to walk behind.
So welcome to Floor 600, a podcast where two friends read the Percy Jackson and the Olympians series. We are your hosts, Quinn.
And Natalie.
Read or listen to the book along with us, or just enjoy this recap slash amateur critique of the series by Rick Riordan. Hopefully we can pronounce things, but we're likely not going to be able to.
Sometimes I wonder if you've read these words before. Welcome to episode 2, as usual. I guess it's not really as usual because we've only done this once before.
Yes.
But here we are, starting with summary of chapters 6 through 9. All right, so chapter 6, I become Supreme Lord of the Bathroom, which earns 4 stars from me.
Oh, I gave it 5 stars.
5 stars?
I thought it was the best. At least from the chapters that we read from today, it was definitely the best chapter title.
Definitely.
I gave it 5.
I could see that. It's probably pretty good. I just didn't want to start off high because we haven't read the whole book yet.
Oh.
So it might be something better.
I don't know. For some reason, I just did the opposite. Because normally I am the last person to give anything 5 stars. I was like, there might be something better out there.
Okay, so Chiron takes Percy on a tour of Camp Half-Blood. And it's a pretty big camp. It's a big valley, and it feels like the whole valley, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
So
I always, like, when I first picture Camp Half-Blood, all I see is, like, a tree on a hill or whatever. And I forget that there's a valley. And mm-hmm. this really reminded me, oh, there's a full-grown camp there.
Yeah.
And it's huge.
Yeah, there are a lot of kids.
I think they say, like, at least 100 at some point, that there's 100 kids.
And it just fluctuates, like, depending on, you know, the gods and
and they have a lot of empty cabins, so it could fit more. So I don't know, I always forget how big Camp Half-Blood actually is.
Like, if you picture it, it's probably like the size of like
a college campus, I would think.
Yeah, because there's so much stuff, as we see as they're walking.
Mm-hmm.
And Percy looks back at the farmhouse and he realizes how huge it is, and he didn't, like, before, just, like, when he's looking back at it, he doesn't have a conception that the house is, like, a huge house.
Yeah.
And so he notices something odd in the attic window of the farmhouse. Foreshadowing.
But I love at this point, I took a note at this point, and I just said, is honesty slash upfrontness a thing?
Not yet.
No, I don't think ever, especially
for the sake
Chiron.
Of plot.
Yeah, I guess. But
because
no one can just say, be honest with him. Like, he's like, oh yeah, there's something up there, but we don't need to talk about it.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about that thing that is here with all these children.
Yeah, they're still acting like, oh, we can't tell Percy everything, even though he's a part of this world now. He should be educated of this world.
It's like, it's obvious that Annabeth knows what's up there.
Yeah, and I'm guessing a lot of other kids do.
Yeah, I mean,
and they're just not telling him. It's like, oh, you have to figure it out for yourself. It's like, no, you should be educated what's present in this world, what you should be concerned of.
I think there's two reasons that authors use that construction. One, because of the whole ignorance is bliss thing, which we discussed last time is dumb.
Yeah.
Two, because if they just immediately revealed everything, there wouldn't be any suspense.
Mm-hmm.
And there wouldn't be, like, that building for the reader of, like, the big reveal.
Whatever, we're still in, like, the first page of the chapter.
Yeah. So, as they walk, Percy sees Dionysus. twins walking in the strawberry fields, and Chiron explains that the camp exports strawberries as a way to pay their expenses.
Which I love.
It's just hilarious because, okay, let's be real. Now that we're adults, how many times have we looked at Hogwarts and been like, they still need money?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I don't think Harry's paying tuition. So, like, how are they functioning?
And
they say that, like, the house elves are, or, well, Dobby is paid.
Yeah.
So, it's like, yeah, most of their staff isn't paid. but you still have to pay your teachers and stuff. Yeah. So where is this money coming from?
I think they, like, went back and they're like, oh, we get the money from this source. And it's like, no, you don't get to add that in 20 years later.
Yeah.
I guess they can, but whatever.
You shouldn't.
So as Percy and Chiron walk through the camp, Chiron explains some things about Grover.
Yeah.
So we discussed in the last episode that we weren't sure why Dionysus was upset with Grover, and Chiron explains it.
Yes.
So, one, Grover lost Percy in New York, mm-hmm. which wasn't actually Grover's fault. Two, Percy's mother died, or disappeared in a spark of golden light.
Rest in peace, Sparkles.
Three, Grover was unconscious when Percy carried him over the property line of the camp. Yeah. And four, this was already Grover's second chance at being a keeper, yeah. which is actually very important to remember.
And I like that they brought up the Council of Cloven Elders, and I looked it up, like I was trying to see if that was a thing in mythology. It was not, but I like the idea of it.
Yeah, because it makes sense. Like, Dionysus obviously isn't going to regulate all the satyrs himself.
Yeah, like there's a hierarchy.
Yeah.
Satyr filled.
So we also find out that satyrs mature half as fast as humans.
Oh, yeah.
Why Grover is 28 years old and he's in sixth grade and he's small for his age.
He's 28 years old.
Yeah.
And he's gone through middle school multiple times. It's horrible.
Poor Grover.
I wouldn't say that my middle school experience was horrible, but I wouldn't want to do it over and over again.
But, I mean, it's not like he doesn't know what he's getting into, like,
that's
trying to
true.
Be a seeker.
He sees it as a job, and I think maybe if I went through middle school and knew it was, it's a job, maybe I'm getting paid of it. Maybe. Do you think Grover gets paid?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know. He should. It's a pretty dangerous job.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like 21 Jump Street, not the movies, which I don't recommend watching if you're under the age of 14, but the original series that came out in like the 80s with Johnny Depp.
Yes.
Because part of their job is to go back to high school over and over again. So when Chiron is referring to Percy's mother, he says, the fate of your mother. He doesn't use the word death. Mm-hmm. When referring to Sally, which sparks something in Percy's mind. He's like,
possibilities? Question mark?
He asks Chiron if the underworld is real, and Chiron's only response is, yes, child.
God, Chiron.
So they keep walking, they find the cabins. And there are 12 cabins, they're arranged in like a U shape, and there's actually not 12 cabins. There's 11.
Yeah, there's 11.
Because Hades doesn't have a cabin.
Nope.
But,
sort of unfair.
Zeus, Hera, Artemis, and Poseidon's cabins are empty, and we find out why later. But Percy, like, sticks his nose in the cabin 3.
Okay, and when he does this, I actually had to look up a word because I had no idea, and I underlined it multiple times because I was like, I don't know what this is. And it's abalone, and I look it up. And it's, abalone are a type of gastropod shellfish. Abalone are known for their colorful inside shell. I recommend looking at, Google Images abalone. It's very pretty.
Because the walls glow like abalone.
But I'm sort of kind of extremely impressed that Percy knows what that is.
Percy is a smart kid.
Yeah, because I feel like they always portray him as not smart, and he is. He knows a lot of vocabulary.
He does.
It's very impressive, the things that he knows, but then it's sort of disappointing the things that he doesn't. And it's like, how do you know this, but you don't know this?
I feel like that's just life when you're 12.
Yes.
You're like, I learned this random thing.
Yeah.
But also, it kind of harkens to Percy's just, like, general love for water and the sea and stuff, so.
Yeah.
So, Percy also asks Chiron, are you the Chiron from the stories? Shouldn't you be dead? Which we also talked about last episode.
Yeah, because Chiron traded in his own mortality. Or not traded in. He was shot by Hercules with a poison arrow.
And died.
Died, but
In this story, in the Percy Jackson mythology, Chiron was granted a wish by the gods so that he could continue to do the work he loved by teaching / training demigods, as long as he is needed, which, knowing the gods, will be forever, so...
Yeah, and I like when he says, like, no, he said, horribly depressing at times, but never boring. And Percy's like, why depressing? And Chiron just ignores that. And yeah. It's like, why depressing? I'll give you an answer, because he's sort of bad at teaching. He can't keep his students alive.
Yeah. So, they meet Annabeth at Cabin 11. At this point, I love how Annabeth is just this, like, constant presence. And Percy's like, who is this girl?
Yeah, she's just sort of, like, following everybody around.
So, Percy recognizes a caduceus, which do you want to tell us what that is?
That is the symbol that you would see on the sides of hospitals. It's like the...
Oh, yeah.
The winged staff with serpents rolling, coming up on it.
He's so smart. See? He knows the word for it.
Yeah. I looked that up.
Percy has more vocabulary than you do.
Why would he recognize that immediately? Like, aha, a caduceus. I would be like, aha.
The pharmacy thing.
Yeah, the pharmacy thing.
So, Cabin 11 is super crowded. There's, like, kids sleeping on the floor, and there's barely enough space for Percy to squeeze in there.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't even have a sleeping bag. So they're like, oh, this is where you can stay. And he's like, I have to sleep on the hot, cold, hard floor. But the campers, this is the Hermes cabin. So the campers ask if Percy is regular or undetermined. And Annabeth says undetermined. And they all groan.
Yeah, because it's like revealed that most of the students there are undetermined. Or even some of them are determined, but they're minor gods, so they don't have their own cabins.
Right.
Which sucks, and why wouldn't you have just...
built them cabins?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe the biggins were like, no.
No.
Those children must be homeless.
I guess. I don't know. It just seems very unfair. But when he... I think one of the very first things Luke says immediately annoyed me. And he says, now, campers, that's what we're here for. Welcome, Percy. It's like, I'm sorry. You live with these people. Don't call them campers.
He's the counselor. He's one of the oldest kids there.
I don't care. You live with them. If I lived with someone, I wouldn't be like, hello, everybody. What are you talking to? He talks to them like they're kindergarteners. And it's like, you're some of them are your siblings.
That's true. So I don't know if we really, like, explain that. Like, each cabin is assigned, for each god, and then the gods, human children live in the cabin.
Yes. And most of them are the human children, but in the Hermes case, it's anyone, because he is the god of travelers and stuff. So travelers and just unclaimed children are welcome. Which I like, because he says, like, oh, our patron is the god of travelers. And I like that it's sort of a hint on Luke's future and thought processes. Because he's just like, he doesn't refer to Hermes as his father. He refers to it as his patron.
Distant.
Mm-hmm.
So, Clarice is from the Ares cabin.
Yes.
Ares is the god of war. And is very aggressive, and all his children are very aggressive, surprise, surprise. And the cabin's painted, like, a really ugly, brash red color and stuff.
Probably because it's painted with blood!
So, Clarice and some of her friends decide that they're going to initiate Percy as the new kid. So, Clarice drags Percy into the girls' bathroom and tries to shove his head in the toilet. And as Percy is looking down in the water, he's like, my head... not going into that water.
Mm-hmm.
And the water shoots out of the toilet.
And just soaks everybody.
Soaks Clarice and her friends and drives them out of the bathroom. And
Annabeth.
It soaks Annabeth, but it doesn't drive Annabeth out of the bathroom. No. She's allowed to stay. So Annabeth is just staring at Percy. And Percy is completely dry through this whole thing.
Yeah.
And Annabeth is just like, I want you on my team for capture the flag. And Percy's like, what?
I don't even know what you're talking about, but that was freaky.
She just, like, doesn't even really comment on what he says, what happened.
I know, and Annabeth is super smart, and I think she's already coming up with theories about who Percy's dad is, but...
Oh, yeah.
She's keeping it to herself.
She's just like, how did you? And he's like, I don't know.
But that is the end of chapter 6, and now we're on to chapter 7. My dinner goes up in smoke.
2 stars.
Oh, I gave it 3.
Really?
Why? I think it's
boring.
Well, it's more exciting than the other ones in this batch.
I mean, it's really, that could literally just mean they burned the macaroni and cheese.
That's true.
It's not that exciting.
All right, I consent. 2.5.
Okay. So Annabeth shows Percy around the camp a little bit more. They see the metal shop.
They see the climbing wall.
Yeah. The arts and crafts room. All this cool stuff that the kids use to, like, learn and, like, stay active and stuff, which just sounds dangerous.
Oh, wait, can I highlight a quote that I was like, I enjoy this quote,
and
I think it should have been the name
best
of the chapter.
Best line, possibly, the whole book.
Yeah, it was, I had become one with the plumbing. It's like, that's just great. That's great. It's just like, I love it. It's like, out of context, it's perfect. In context, it's perfect. I don't know.
It's
fun.
Pretty. It's a pretty great line, not gonna lie.
It's a great line. They should have just made that a chapter title.
So, they start talking about, like, how camp is home and stuff. And Annabeth, they meet the naiads. And Percy says, I want to go home now.
Yeah, and Annabeth is like, you can't go home, you belong here.
This is home. And he's like, she says, this is the only safe place on earth for kids like us. You mean mentally disturbed kids? I mean not human, not totally human anyway, half human. Half human and half what? I think you know. Which at this point is pretty obvious, but they're still
playing around it. It is, but Percy sort of
needs
it, like, to be spelled out for him,
yeah.
Which is just... Percy, you know what a caduceus is.
Yeah.
This should be pretty obvious for you.
Like how, okay, come on, Percy. That's one of those really moments, but I guess sometimes you just don't understand things.
Yeah, especially
like,
when something refers to yourself. It's like you're trying to.
You really need
this
to
is
explain.
A big life change for you, and you're just like, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. So, they start talking about how Percy never knew his father, and, like, he only knew Sally, and Annabeth says, your father isn't dead, Percy. He's one of the Olympians. Duh. And Percy's like, what? Mm-hmm. And then we find out that Annabeth's mother is Athena, and Percy's like, that makes sense.
You seem smart. Okay.
Athena is the goddess of wisdom. So,
and battle plans.
Yeah, she's pretty BA, not gonna lie.
Yeah.
So, we also find out that some of the campers are year-rounders. If their godly parent is exceptionally powerful, like Athena, Ares,
Hermes,
some of them, because they're more likely to attract monsters.
Yes.
Whereas other campers just spend the summer there.
Mm-hmm. And I like that they mention, like, some people can, or some don't even come to camp. Because they can live on the outside world, but they normally become famous. And I was thinking, maybe we'll talk about this in Quest Queries, but keep it in mind. Who could be a god, or like demigods?
So also, the only way that monsters can enter the camp is if they're summoned by someone inside the camp. So again, very important foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing.
So we also find out, this is just, like, the expository episode.
Yes.
Like,
we're finding out a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, in the previous chapter, we find out that the monsters can come back, so we might see Mrs. Dodds again.
Right, because they can't be killed, they can only be dispelled.
Yes.
So, Annabeth has been at camp since she was 7 years old, and her main goal is to get a quest, which is the highest honor a demigod can get.
Yes.
So she was kind of hoping when she heard that Percy was coming, got to camp and stuff, that she and Percy could work together. But She's slightly worried because Athena doesn't get along with everyone, and Annabeth is very loyal to her mother.
Yes. Which I think is sort of crazy because, I feel like if your parents don't like someone, or like each other, like let's say you have you're friends with someone and your parents don't like their parents, that doesn't mean that you can't hang out with them.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like, okay, but your parents aren't present here. You can still hang out.
I don't think I would be friends with someone who told me they couldn't hang out with me because their parents didn't like my parents.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Percy's just like, I don't know what you're talking about. So, they go to dinner and, like, all the campers eat dinner together.
Oh, we missed the most important part.
Oh, no, which one?
It refers to our freaking title.
What?
You didn't notice that it refers to our chapter, or our title, the title of our podcast?
Yes, I did.
Where? Where is it? Prove to me that you noticed.
It's on page 99. The Long Island Railroad, of course. You get off at Penn Station, Empire State Building, special elevator to the 600th floor.
Welcome to floor 600.
Name drop.
You didn't see it, but she dropped the invisible microphone.
Shouldn't laugh so much at our own jokes.
Too bad.
So, I like this because Annabeth just, like, mutters a lot. She's like, I've got to get a quest. I'm not too young. There's several points throughout the book where she's just, like, caught muttering to herself. Yeah, like, so, at dinner, they all sit segregated by their godly parent tables, which I have so many issues with the segregation.
Yes. Yes. It's like,
division,
why?
Division, I should say.
It's like, it's Harry Potter. Why are you separated from houses? Are there no houses or inner family relationships? Like,
yeah.
You're only friends with your siblings and Camp Half-Blood.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I have a sibling. I would get really fed up if I had to eat dinner with her every freaking night, even on summer camp when there's so many other people around.
And, like, the Hermes table is so full, Percy can barely fit on the bench. And then Luke wonders why the students get annoyed.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man.
Well,
like,
I wonder if Luke wonders just, and he actually knows. Like, he understands it, but he's not allowed to.
He's trying to be the role model.
Yeah.
Probably, this is really true. Percy gets to know Luke a little bit. So, Luke is 19, but Percy likes him a lot and they get along.
I think
they
kind of hit it off.
I could have sworn he was 19. This is Luke. The guy was about 19 and he looked pretty cool.
Oh, okay. Fine.
Obviously Luke's father is Hermes, the god of travelers. So we also find out that Luke had a quest a while ago, but it didn't go well, and he screwed everything up for everybody else. And that's why Annabeth can't get a quest.
And that's where they talk about prophecies. And I like this part because, well, she on page 102, Luke says about Annabeth, she pestered Chiron so much he finally told her that he already knew her fate. He'd had a prophecy from the Oracle. He wouldn't tell her the whole thing, but he said that Annabeth wasn't destined to go on a quest yet. She had to wait until somebody special came into the camp.
Somebody special?
Somebody special. But I don't remember the prophecy that sort of overarches the entire series, but I don't remember it directly referring to a child of Athena.
I think we don't even hear about that until
we don't hear about that in this book at all. But
I don't remember it.
But I don't know. I was just trying to think of other prophecies that sort of determined exactly Annabeth, and I couldn't think of any. But that might just because my lapse in memory. I don't know. It made me think that maybe Chiron goes up to the Oracle for every new camper and sort of asks for a prophecy.
Or maybe he was just up there and it was like, So, also, I think it's cute that Luke steals toiletries for Percy from the camp store. And he also finds Percy a sleeping bag, I think.
I like to imagine Luke does that for everybody, not just Percy.
Yeah.
But
So the interesting fact about dinner is that everyone has to sacrifice some of their dinner to the gods by scraping it into the fire.
Yeah.
But it smells really good.
Yeah. And I feel like, I don't know, I would be a bit more bitter about it.
I know, I'd be like, oh. Like, I
have there's to get- a lot of these kids never meet their godly parent.
And yeah.
They still are required to scrape some of their food.
Well, like
just
Percy.
Like angrily scrape it in. Ugh, here's my food, I guess.
He's like, Percy's like, I don't even know this guy. He literally abandoned me.
Yeah.
And
I have to give you my best brisket or whatever it is.
Reddest strawberry thing.
But it is cool that their drinks can be whatever they want.
Yeah.
So he asked for blue cherry Coke. Because he misses his mom.
R.I.P. Sparkles. So he starts to enjoy the dinner and they have a sing-along after. And Percy starts to think that maybe he will do okay at camp after all.
Yeah, maybe he does fit in.
Chapter 8.
What?
We capture a flag. Which I only gave this 2 stars, but I feel like I should have given it 3.
I gave it 2.5.
It's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Capture a flag.
Yeah. I've played Capture the Flag. It's fun.
It is fun. And especially if they have like a gigantic camp.
Yeah.
That would be fun. So before they capture a flag.
Yeah, we're actually on to chapter 8. Okay.
Percy, so this isn't just like regular summer camp. They take lessons in like demigod stuff.
Yeah. But highlight. Chiron is not teaching any of these lessons.
That's not true. He teaches archery.
Oh, well, okay. But, fine. He teaches one lesson. He's supposed to be the main teacher.
Yeah. I find it hilarious that Annabeth is the one who teaches Percy.
Yeah, I took a note. Like, do students teach themselves? I don't see how that's a...
Yeah.
I feel like that's a flawed system.
It's, like, reliant on having an advanced student there.
Yeah.
Who's good at, like, what if...
And I guess it is... Yeah, like, what if Athena... didn't have any kids 1 year.
Yeah.
Or didn't have kids for 10 years.
Yeah.
Then who's teaching them? Like, oh, the Hephaestus kids come in and like, oh yeah, I know ancient Greek, I guess, a little bit.
They're just hoping that they have, like, Annabeth is just there forever.
Yeah.
So, Percy's dyslexia actually helps him read the ancient Greek.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how demigods are.
Yeah.
So he takes classes like archery and wrestling, but he sucks at everything except canoeing.
Which I like so much. But we've canoed funny. Once and we failed.
Canoeing is so hard. So I can
kayak.
Him.
Yeah. Kayaking is so much easier than canoeing.
Kayaking is fun.
Remember when we canoed?
Yes, it was awful.
We tipped that canoe so many times.
It was the biggest, heaviest boat I've ever seen.
Yeah, everyone else was in kayaks, and we were the only two in canoes, and we flipped that thing so many times, and we had all the supplies in our thing, didn't we? We had a lot of supplies in our boat.
I don't remember.
I think they were all in baggies, but I remember chasing after things.
But I don't know why we got a canoe, because we could have gotten a two-person kayak.
No, I think they were all run out of two-people kayak. We were in a huge group of people, and everyone else got kayaks, and we were stuck with the canoe, and it was awful.
It was awful.
We made a vow never to canoe again.
Yeah, so I'm proud of Percy for being good at canoeing. So all the kids are kind of wondering about Percy, but nobody can guess who his godly parent is.
Yeah.
And Percy kind of starts to understand why Luke resents the gods for not calling or caring about their kids.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, he's struggling with not knowing who his dad is.
Yeah, and he's still mourning the loss of his mom, R.I.P. Sparkles.
Right. So Luke is like that cool older kid, you know?
Yeah.
So Percy is like, yeah. And he's on to something.
And once again, we are faced with students teaching students, with Luke teaching
sword fighting. So Luke tries to help Percy find a good sword, but Percy has a lot of trouble finding a blade that feels balanced in his hand, because it all feels either too heavy or too light or blah, blah.
Yeah.
So they're practicing sword fighting, and Luke pours water over his head, and Percy's like really hot and tired, and he's like,
because he's just been getting beat up all
right.
day.
So he's like, that looks like such a good idea, and he pours water over his own head, which energizes and refreshes him,
and then somehow gives him extreme skills with swords.
Yeah.
And he's able to beat Luke.
Yeah, so he disarms Luke. Everybody's surprised, including Percy.
Yeah.
And then Percy tries to do it again, and he fails miserably, and one of the Hermes kids is like, beginner's luck. Yeah. I'm like, shut up, kid. So Percy and Grover, obviously, are still friends, so they are talking on the pier at the lake, and Percy asks Grover about his conversation with Mr. D. And Grover is like, kind of blushes and stutters. He says that Mr. D has suspended judgment on Grover's success/failure in his mission to keep Percy.
Yeah, so he's sort of on suspension.
Yeah, which is lame. So Percy asks about the four empty cabins, and Grover explains, well, Artemis doesn't have any kids because she's a maiden for life.
Yeah.
Hades,
but she would be angry if they didn't have a cabin.
Right, she'd be like, I want a cabin too.
Yeah.
So, Hades...
yet they cannot make freaking cabins for other
cats. Right?
I don't know. Okay.
Maybe they were, the Big 12 were like, no, those other minions don't deserve cabins.
Those are the lonely gods.
So Hades doesn't have a cabin because it would be unpleasant.
How would it be more unpleasant than Ares?
I don't know.
Like, I guess it would have, like, ghosts outside.
Yeah, like
a graveyard in the backyard.
The Hades kids would just be in there writing like dark poetry and like painting like emo portraits of themselves.
That'd be so funny.
Nobody would ever see them, so how unpleasant would it be?
They would come out only at night.
Yeah. But, like, only at dinner. So Zeus, Poseidon, and Hera all vowed not to have any more demigod children after World War II.
Or not Hera, because Hera never had them, because she's the goddess of marriage. And she wouldn't cheat on her husband.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay. So Zeus and Poseidon agreed not to have...
Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's another reason he doesn't have a cabin, because he doesn't have any kids.
Well... Zeus and Poseidon have kids, but they have cabins.
Theoretically. Anyway.
So. Whatever, they made a vow not to have any more kids after World War II.
Because World War II was a fight between the sons of Zeus and Poseidon on one side and the sons of Hades on the other.
I sort of want to know, so obviously, I'm sorry, obviously, Hades' kid is Hitler. But...
But I think, like, they say sons, plural.
Yes. Well, Hitler and Goering. I don't know. And Goebbels. But then they say that Zeus and Poseidon's kids won the war. So Zeus and Poseidon's kids are the allies. Mm-hmm. So who do you think, in world leaders-wise, of that time were Zeus and Poseidon's kids? I don't know. I was just thinking about it, and then, like... Because I wonder, because it's like, you can't just go, oh yes, Churchill was Britain, or Churchill was, or Britain was Zeus, and
America was... No, Zeus was, or Churchill is totally a son of Zeus.
Yeah? Yeah. And then what about, Eisenhower? I don't know. There's a lot of guys that I was like, oh, who could that be? Who could that be? Patton was Aries. Patton was the son of Aries. I'll give you that. There's no question about it. Whatever.
There's a little of the history nerd for you guys. So, we find out that Zeus did actually have a child because he couldn't contain himself around a pretty 70s...
Or 80s.
80s movie star. I thought it was 70s, whatever. So, the child's name is Talia.
I feel like... I remember, I listened to the audiobook, and they pronounce it Thalia, and I don't like that pronunciation, so, Talia.
I think that the H could be rolled into the T. Like, Talia.
What, you want to pronounce Thalia. The H, like...
Yeah, like an aspirated H, like in French. But, like, why would it be pronounced like the?
Yeah.
Thalia.
I don't know. The audiobook has a few issues in my mind. It's like Jim Dale's pronunciation of Voldemort.
Oh, the fourth book, he's saying Voldemort.
Yeah, because that's the correct way.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Well, it's like, I can't think of any other examples of that kind of name, but...
Like, maybe Therese? Sometimes it's spelled with a TH.
See, that would be a French spelling of that, though.
Yeah.
See? That's what I'm going with. It's Talia from now on. Yeah. It sounds ugly the other way. So, since the Big Three's kids attract more attention than the other demigods, Talia was assigned a keeper to get to camp, but she didn't make it all the way and ended up being turned into the pine tree at the top of Half-Blood Hill.
Yes. And, okay, so I like, so the math in this, it's like, so 17 years ago, Zeus fell off the wagon, so that means if Talia was still alive, she'd be 17 years old. But then, okay, let's say that she's, was, tried to be brought to camp when she was 12. So that means Half-Blood Hill has only been called Half-Blood Hill for 5 years. So what was the camp called before it was Half-Blood Hill?
I don't know. Maybe just like...
It just had a massive rebranding at one point.
Well, I mean, the camp is called Camp Half-Blood, so maybe the hill was only called Half-Blood Hill for 5 years. And before it was just like a hill.
Yeah. I don't know. It threw me off when it was like, it's been called that ever since. I was like, that's not a long time.
Yeah. So Percy asks if anybody has ever survived a trip to the underworld, and Grover says yes. Orpheus, Hercules, and Houdini have survived, and you can see the spark in Percy's mind just keep growing. So then it's time for Capture the Flag. Woo! So, all right. So they're all the kids are ready. They're, like, getting all armored up and stuff. So Hermes and Apollo have teamed up with Athena after trading privileges.
Yeah.
And Luke tells Percy, you're going to help. It's very, like, pointed the way he says it. You're going to help. So Ares is teamed up with everybody
else. Which
tells
me that Luke knows of Annabeth's plan.
Of course he does.
Annabeth tells Luke everything.
Annabeth has a massive crush on Luke.
Yeah.
Luke makes Annabeth blush just by existing.
Yeah. So if someone brings up the name Luke, she gets all, like, fluttery.
Yeah.
Like,
so, of course, Luke knows. So Ares is teamed up with everybody else. Luke hands Percy a big old shield and spear and tells him to be on border control, which Percy thinks is lame. Because he's like, oh, I'm going to miss all the fun
but
stuff.
But at the same time, I would be very thankful because...
Yeah, I would rather be on border control.
Yeah, they say no maiming like it's happened before.
Well, these are kids with actual weapons.
Yeah.
So there's got to be some rules. So Percy goes into, like, the creek, which is, like, the border to patrol, quote-unquote. And Clarice and her jerk friends go to get revenge on Percy for the bathroom incident.
Yes.
So they cut Percy's arm, and they're, like, beating up on him. He's getting kind of, like, obviously he's in pain and he's bleeding.
Because he's getting beat up.
Yeah. And they shove him into the creek, and again, the water starts waking him up and, like, revitalizes him. So he's, like, dealing with Clarice and them. The Ares kids, and then the Hermes kids come running up with the red team's flag, cheering and blah, 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 and woohoo, they made it.
Mm-hmm.
They won.
And at this point, Percy has beat everybody else up.
Yeah. He, like, breaks Clarice's spear.
Which is sort of upsetting. Yeah, why? She's a bully, but that is a cool spear.
Who cares? She's mean.
He should have taken it.
Oh. He probably wouldn't want it, honestly. It wouldn't have worked for him.
Well, you never know. It's just a spear. It's a tool. You can make it work.
True. But Annabeth appears in the creek beside Percy because she takes off her
magic hat.
Yankees cap. Yeah. Yankees baseball hat. Which makes her invisible.
Yes.
And she's like, Percy, what happened to your arm or whatever? And he looks down and it's healing.
Yeah.
It's like right before his eyes it just heals.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all like, wow, and, like, Chiron's there, and they're all celebrating the Hermes and Athena team win. And then Deo Mortalis, a hellhound, jumps out of the woods, scratches Percy across the chest. So at this point he's not in the water, so everybody shoots arrows at the hellhound and dispels it. And Annabeth is like, Percy, you're hurt. And he's like, I'm fine, even though he has claw marks across
his
chest.
Why would he say he's fine?
Because he's trying to be tough.
It's stupid. He almost died. Don't be tough.
So Annabeth makes Percy step back into the creek, and his wounds begin to heal again. And everybody kind of goes, what? And mm-hmm. Percy's like, I don't know why it's happening.
Like, I'm sorry.
I don't understand it either. And then he noted, he, like, sees that there's a trident above his head floating, yeah. like, shimmering. And Chiron says, it is determined. And Percy's like, what? And Chiron says, Poseidon, Earthshaker, Stormbringer, Father of Horses, hail Perseus Jackson, son of the sea god.
Yeah.
So, Perseus Jackson is the son of Poseidon. Okay. Bum-ba-dum, big dramatic ending to that chapter on the chapter 9. I am offered a quest. I gave that 1 star, but maybe it could have 2, because it is kind of exciting.
Yeah, I gave it 2.5, but it can easily be turned back into 2, because I put that half because I was like, eh. It was a weak half.
Yeah. So Percy moves into cabin 3, which is the one that glowed, the walls were glowing.
Yes.
It has silk sheets on the beds, which sounds so nice.
Yeah, it's much better than the sleeping bag on the hard floor.
So it's really nice, and Percy can, like, decide his own activities and call lights out on his own and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's lonely, because
yeah.
he was getting used to being with all the Hermes
yeah.
kids.
Yeah, and now even because they have to sit separate, or whatever, sit according to your houses, he's sitting by himself all the time.
Yeah.
He's basically all by himself all the time.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that the campers are afraid of him because mm-hmm. of what he did to the Ares kids. And
yeah.
they realize that somebody is legit out to kill him because they summoned a hellhound.
Yeah.
From the underworld.
And then for some reason, Clarice thinks that he summoned it for a second.
Yeah.
And it's like, why would he summon it to attack himself?
He's
God, Clarice. Come on.
Trying to throw everybody else off by having it attack him.
Mm-hmm.
So Luke starts pushing Percy even harder in sword fighting because he's like, you're gonna need to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Or you're gonna die mm-hmm. a gruesome death.
Yeah.
And Annabeth, even more than ever, starts muttering about getting a quest and making plans and yeah. getting involved with.
But she's now a little bit like, what if, can I really be close friends with this guy because my mom doesn't like her?
Right.
His dad.
Because Athena and Poseidon don't get along.
Yeah. Which is dumb.
Yeah.
We've already discussed this. It's dumb.
So, Percy goes back to his lonely but fancy cabin after a day, and he finds a newspaper inside the door, and the headline is, Boy and Mother Still Missing After Freak Car Accident. And the article suggests that Percy might be a suspect in his mother's disappearance mm-hmm. because Smelly Gabe told the media that Percy was troubled and suspicious.
Yeah, has, like, violent tendencies.
Yeah. Screw you, Smelly Gabe.
What I liked about that is when he finds the newspaper, he says, I came into my cabin and I found a mortal newspaper dropped inside the doorway. And the key words to that is mortal
yeah.
newspaper. So does that mean that there are immortal newspapers?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't either. But so does that mean that Percy has seen these immortal newspapers? And if so, why aren't they reporting on the major theft that has happened in the immortal world?
Maybe we're looking too into it, and Rick was like, just wanted to specify, because he's like,
yeah.
oh, I don't want them to think that, you know,
That's true.
That these kids were reading, like, the New York Inquirer or the New York Times or whatever.
Yeah. And also, they're kids. Why would they actually care about the news?
Yeah, so the,
like,
only reason somebody...
Chiron might be actually get the immortal newspaper every day, and it's out there for everyone to read, but Annabeth's the only one who reads it.
Yeah. Yeah, wouldn't surprise me. So, that night, the same night, Percy has a dream that 2 guys in Greek tunics, one green and one blue, are wrestling on a beach, and for some reason, Percy has to stop them. So
yep.
he's, like, running toward them and stuff. But he hears a voice coming up from somewhere in the earth, telling him to come down, little hero. Which is just horrifying, but then
yeah.
he wakes up. So Grover fetches Percy because Dionysus wants to speak to him. Which I would not be. I would be afraid. I would be afeared.
I like when he says it, I can't find it right now, but he, when Grover is all like, oh yeah, Mr. D wants to speak, or kill, I mean speak to you.
Percy's yeah. like, oh, what?
Like, oh, why do I want to come with you then?
Yeah. He's like, maybe I'll just stay in my fancy cabin. So, as they walk across camp, Percy notices that a storm is brewing overhead, and Grover tells him that it only rains at camp when they want it to.
Yeah.
But Percy's like, well, then why is this giant storm brewing? And so they get to the farmhouse, and Dionysus tells Percy, if I had my way, I would cause your molecules to erupt in flames. Which is not okay, because it's not Percy's fault that he was born. This is not his fault at all.
But then he also says, oh, maybe I'll just turn you into a dolphin and send you to your dad.
Yeah. Which Poseidon would not be happy about.
No, he wouldn't. But he's not dead, and Poseidon probably has the power to turn him back.
Yeah,
so
honestly, he'd be like, what, Dionysus?
So maybe it was a better option.
Yeah. Yeah, Percy would just be able to live there with his dad for a while.
Yeah.
So Dionysus disappears. He snaps his fingers and he's gone.
Yeah, so he's got to have a chit-chat with his dad.
Yeah. So Chiron starts offering Percy a quest.
Mm-hmm.
And as usual, he won't give all the details up front. Because Percy would be too afraid.
Yeah.
So Zeus and Poseidon are fighting over something.
Okay. So you said, like, because Percy would be too afraid. He has no option to say no. Because if he says no, he's going to die.
Yeah.
And if he says yes, he might die. Yeah. But he has a less likely chance of dying.
Yeah.
So, why would he say no?
Well, also, I like how the chapter is called I Am Offered a Quest. Because it's, like, offered or, like, pushed into taking it. Because, like you just said, does he really have a choice? This all has to do with Percy's dream, of course. Mm-hmm. And Percy says, the weather since Christmas has been weird, like the sea and the sky are fighting. And it's like, yeah, no duh.
Yeah, and he's just like, oh yeah, so it's Poseidon and Zeus. They're fighting over something valuable. Something was stolen, aren't they? And Chiron and Grover are like, ah, he's the thief! Like, I feel like they immediately like, oh no, all of our suspicions are incorrect and he is the thief. And he's just like, no, you've just been really bad at skirting around the issue.
They're always like shocked when Percy knows things. It's like, how can you be surprised? Do you know this kid at all?
Yeah, he's not as dumb as he seems.
He's literally the son of one of the most powerful gods that there is. And
they
so
treat
surprised.
It like, I feel like they always are like skirting around things in such an obvious way that, and he's not that dumb, and it's like, he's just like, yeah, I understand that you're skirting around the issue.
Yeah, he's very observant, as we said.
Mm-hmm.
So Chiron and Grover tell Percy that a lightning bolt has been stolen, and Percy's like, what? And it's actually Zeus's master bolt, the symbol of his power, the weapon that hurled Cronus from his throne.
Mm-hmm.
And Zeus thinks that Percy stole the bolt because a god cannot directly usurp another god's power. So he thinks Poseidon convinced a human hero to take the bolt.
Specifically Percy.
Yes, because it's his son. Why not? It's useful. And now Zeus wants the bolt returned by the summer solstice, and Poseidon wants an apology for being accused by the same date.
Yep. And the summer solstice is in, like, 10 days?
Yes, like 11 days.
Yeah.
Percy has to go upstairs to the attic where he saw the strange thing and talk to the oracle before he can go on his quest. And honestly, why?
Yeah.
What difference does it make? How is this random, like, how are these random words going to help him?
I don't think it does. Because, okay, so we get the quest and it's come, or the oracle is a creepy mummy person, whatever, in the attic. And the prophecy is, you shall go west and face the god who has turned. You shall find what was stolen and see it safely returned. You shall be betrayed by one who calls you a friend, and you shall fail to save what matters most in the end. That doesn't really tell them anything any new information other than, oh, you shall fail to save, like, you shall, I guess, like, the betrayal part and the failing part is new information, but other than that, that's all information that they already had, and the betray and fail part isn't important.
Yeah.
It's actually detrimental to the quest.
Yeah. So, because, like, he's going to spend the whole quest being like, oh, well, something's going to go
yeah,
wrong.
Yeah, he, like, spends his entire time, like, suspecting people.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't really understand why he has to go out there, but it's, like, a really creepy attic with the creepy oracle and blah, blah. So, Percy comes back down. He's kind of shook from
yeah,
the prophecy.
Yeah, because he was told that he was going to be betrayed. And
he's going to fail. And he's like, well, thanks, I guess.
That was fun.
So, Chiron tells Percy that the god in the west is Hades, and that they suspect that the Master Bolt is in the underworld. And the entrance to the underworld is in Los Angeles.
And he says it like, oh, yes, obviously it's in Los Angeles.
And I'm like, I've never been to Los Angeles, so maybe I would relate more if I had been there.
Yeah.
But they all seem like
I'm like, oh, yes, of course, Los Angeles. Hell.
Like, like, I feel like there are other places.
Yeah. Could be like Jacksonville, Florida!
Yeah. Oh my god, that sounds way worse to me. But no offense to any Jacksonville people.
But you have to know that you're a butt of everybody's jokes.
So once Grover finds out all this information, he very hesitantly agrees to accompany Percy on his quest.
And I like how he's just like, but what about Maine?
Maine is
Can
so
we go to
nice
Maine?
This time of
I
year.
Sort of just want him, like, there should be a book.
The
Grover book, where it's just his vacation in Maine.
Yeah. So that spark is really going in Percy's mind, and he's like, the underworld, huh? Where my mom is.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm. So he has some extra plans going on.
So Annabeth appears out of nowhere because she's super nosy and really wants a quest.
And literally out of nowhere. She was invisible this entire time.
Chilling in her Yankees hat. Invisible. She basically demands to go on a quest with Percy and Grover, and Percy's like, eh. And then he's like, okay, because he knows that Annabeth is smart and she's got a strategy and she knows a lot more than Percy does.
Yeah.
So he's like, okay.
She's also more skilled. She's been at camp a lot longer.
Right.
And she's more skilled at sword and knife fighting and just fighting in general.
She just knows so much. So it starts to pour down rain in the valley, and the kids all go get ready for the quest.
Yeah.
Which I just love weather as a symbol in literature in general.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, I don't know. I like that it starts raining right then. Okay, that is it for our chapter summary for today.
All right, so welcome to Bring On the Monsters. So there aren't that many monsters in this chapter. There's only one. It is the Hellhound.
Woo!
And so I did a lot of research on this, and I couldn't really find much Greek mythology specifically on the Hellhound.
Really?
Other than Cerberus, who's the Hellhound. But, so a lot of the things that I'm going to talk to you about is off of the Riordan Wiki.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
Thank you, Wikipedia friend. Give those $3 to it. Donate now.
Not a sponsor.
But then, like, hellhounds are in a lot of other mythologies and folklore.
Yeah, they're all over the place.
Yeah. So, but for it, from the Riordan Wiki, all right, so hellhounds are the children of the goddess Nyx and Cerberus, and they are basically just massive black dogs who guard / attack people in the underworld. They're
as if you're not suffering enough, you're gonna get mauled by a giant dog.
Yeah. And then, so they do have special skills in the Riordanverse, the Percyverse.
I like that.
But we don't really learn anything about those skills in these chapters or even in this book. We learn about them later in the series, but
right.
So we don't really need to talk about them, but basically they can travel. But then they're in other literature, and more specifically the one that I just read. I just read Good Omens by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett, and they have a hellhound, and it's really cute.
It's really cute.
I recommend it. It's a bit more mature reading, but basically there's a... The Antichrist is given a hellhound, and the dog is supposed to do whatever he wants, and the Antichrist... And it's a huge, giant, big old black dog that's like the size of Great Dane, and it's really vicious. Aww. And the Antichrist does not want a really big, vicious dog. He wants sort of like a more terrier dog who just will make trouble. There's a big... The description in the book is like there's a sudden pop, as if something very large turned into something very small. And it out came a scrappy looking dog with one ear turned inside out.
Aww. And that sounds like my dog.
No, and that's the hellhound, and it's really cute. So yeah, that is Bring on the Monsters. It's very short because there's only one monsters.
Alright. Short and sweet.
And then, oh my gods! Welcome to the section, oh my gods. So, I'm going to talk a little bit more about Dionysus, but more specifically Dionysus and the satyrs, because we talk more about satyrs and his relationship with them in this chapter. Basically, Dionysus in his, he had like a big cult, which we talked about in the last episode, and in this cult there are maenads? I don't know. Basically, wild women. I don't think I wrote it in my notes. Oh, that's why I was guessing. But basically some, like, half-naked, naked women and satyrs who would follow them around, and they would just be in a constant parade / party all the time and have lots of fun. Satyrs were known as lovers of wine, music, dancing, and women. So they fit perfectly in with Dionysus and his whole thing. But when they were not depicted with Dionysus, they were thought to live in remote places such as woodlands, mountains, and pastures. But in very early mythology, they were sort of more horse/man creatures.
The satyrs or horsemen?
Yeah. But instead, not like centaurs with four legs, but with two legs. And then eventually they sort of evolved into goat-like, more goat-like, and that's according to some things that I read that was caused from an interaction with Pan.
Oh yeah, Pan.
Yeah. So we'll talk about more about Pan when we are introduced to Pan in the book. But yeah. I don't know. They became more goat-like, and they're cool little pasture-like creatures, and they're sort of just, like, friends with people.
The demigods?
Yeah, demigods. And they're sort of just, like, creatures of the wild, and they would make friends with trees, and...
They seem pretty cool.
Yeah, no. They were party animals, literally.
But if you accuse them of being anything other than goats, they will bleat angrily at you.
Yes. The other god that, or godlike creature, whatever, god-inspired thing that we interact with in these chapters is the Oracle of Delphi.
Yes,
or the Spirit of Delphi.
Mysterious mummy person.
Yes. Oh. Creepy mummy in the hippie dress.
Yes.
So in Greek mythology, the Oracle of Delphi was famous throughout Greece. It was located in the city of Delphi, hence the name Delphi. And people all over the then known world would flock into the city to seek advice from the Oracle.
What kind of advice would that be, though? It's so vague.
It is. But it would be like, oh, is it cool if I marry this Helen of Troy person? And they're like, no! Or, yeah! Or whatever. Or, like, if I wage war against this person, will I win? And it's like, there'll be many losses. But according to many things, it's like any prophecy, they were really good at being vague.
Yeah.
Vague enough that it could go either way.
It's like when you ask, like, a lawyer for advice or something, and then they give you, like, well, it could go this way. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, it's like, liability. Yeah. I didn't actually advise you.
They don't give you any hard answers, like, yes or no. They give you...
Maybe.
So the Oracle of Delphi was were said to speak on behalf of the gods, specifically Apollo, because Apollo was the god of prophecy. So, cool. And so that, yeah, we didn't actually have that much interaction with immortal beings in this chapter.
Yeah.
So sometimes these sections will be long, sometimes they'll be short.
That's fine.
Yeah. All right, then now for
Quest Query!
I was so scared writing these questions, because when I was taking notes, I was like, I didn't feel like I was taking many notes, and I wasn't going to have many questions, and then when I was typing out my quest queries, I was like, oh, there's a page and a half.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that's because we had a lot of exposition in these chapters, so there's a lot of things that we can just theorize on, and I don't know.
There's a line at the beginning of chapter 6 when they're walking around through the camp, and Percy notices the other kid's satyr friends, and I just think that's so cute. He's like, they're satyr friends, we're all grown up. It's like, aw. Do demigods come to camp prepared with their own sword and shield? I suspect not, but it does seem like a lot of them have their own weapons and stuff. Yes,
and Chiron, when he is, like, showing Percy the armory, is like, oh, I suspect that you do not have one. Like, people do come. Like, so it was, so I wonder if there are parents of maybe, like, the less powerful gods, and, like, maybe,
Yeah.
Why can't I think of the less
like powerful? Like, Artemis, or not Artemis.
Oh my god, Aphrodite.
Maybe
they're the parents of Aphrodite's kids, like, will give them a knife or something.
Yeah. Well,
send them off to camp.
My understanding is that not everybody is as weird as Sally is, so maybe Sally understood, like, the significance of Poseidon, like, in the whole scheme of things, and was like, my son's gonna be crazy, and instead of telling him... So, how does the climbing wall work?
That's just a thing that I need to know. How does the climbing wall work?
Why do you ask?
Because it's weird. It's lava.
They're literally demigods who are taught by gods.
But it's lava.
Who cares?
It would cool.
They have to avoid it.
And most equipment that would keep the lava hot would melt.
Quinn. Magic. Okay?
That's not an answer.
Don't forget. Yes, it is.
And then we sort of hinted at this question, but do you have any ideas of who do you think is a demigod in this world? In this real world?
Yeah, said Houdini, obviously.
Yeah, because we talk about Houdini. Or they talk about Houdini.
I said Elvis.
Ooh. Right? Because I was thinking they would die young, so it must work. And what's James Dean?
Yeah, I was gonna say him too.
Yeah.
Amy Winehouse.
Mmm.
Maybe she was a daughter of Aries.
Aries?
Yeah. She seemed aggressive. I don't know.
Okay. Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah. Ooh, she was totally a daughter of Aphrodite.
I was thinking James Dean was Aphrodite, too.
Oh, yeah. I can see it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's a lot of people that it's just like, oh, could they be? Could they be?
Yeah.
As I said, Patton, Aries.
And we could go on and on.
I know, we could. It could be a 5,000-minute section of us just going, could this person? What about this?
My question was, why is Poseidon the Stormbringer and not Zeus?
I think because the Greek gods and storms were more threatening from the sea than anything.
That's true. Hurricanes and tsunamis.
Mm-hmm. Tropical storms.
Like, one day Poseidon was just like, I don't like you anymore.
Yeah. But I would think that Zeus and Poseidon would really have to do, like, some teamwork.
Yeah.
To come up with a hurricane or something.
Or they just didn't, and Zeus is like, what are you doing? Like, Poseidon is, like, the god of the storms that come from the sea, and Zeus is, like, the tornadoes.
Yeah.
Well, I guess tornadoes start from the ground up. Yeah, not the sky down, so I don't know.
Yeah. Do monsters carry swords?
I doubt it. Why do you ask?
Because they teach sword fighting. Like, you're fighting people with swords, and the skills you need to fight with swords. So they're alluding to needing skills to fight a sword. You can't practice sword
fighting with yourself. You have to have a sparring partner.
Well, when you're fighting a monster with a sword, all you need to do is slish slash and cut him off.
Taking a bath.
Slish slash, you're taking a bath.
I don't think they anticipate the monsters having swords. I think they anticipate a monster being able to fight back, and you need to be prepared.
I guess. And then there's, like, some demigods that carry knives, which just seems impractical when fighting a monster.
But very practical for cutting ropes.
Don't worry, you're fighting the Hydra. I'll cut this rope. I wonder if there's, like, a demigod that's carrying around some scissors to fight a monster. Or a really sharp fork.
It's
actually just,
it's like a Hephaestus kid has it for, like, art and crafts.
Hephaestus kid's carrying around, a freaking Swiss Army knife, and it has a screwdriver. I'll kill a monster with a screwdriver!
I feel like you couldn't do that one.
A bottle opener! Ha!
That's so funny.
Oh my god.
Alright, that's it for episode 2 of chapters 6 through 9 of The Lightning Thief. Good news!
We have plugs!
Yeah! So, send us your Percy Jackson stories and comments.
Answers to our questions, yes. Your own theories.
Thoughts on who could be a demigod now.
Yeah.
Interact with us, people!
We're on Twitter and Instagram.
At floor_600.
Yes. Look it up. We're there.
We also have an email. floor600.podcast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. We'll respond, probably.
We'll try.
If there's not, 5,000 emails. Which I doubt there will be.
So, hey, here's an idea. Right now, we have, maybe one listener. So, if you send us an email now, you're really likely to get a response.
Yeah. Yeah.
We can't guarantee anything 2 years from now.
Nope.
So, you can listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, and Stitcher because Quinn is a superstar.
I am.
Follow us. Interact. Read. Grab your Camp Half-Blood t-shirt.
Yeah. And next episode we're reading chapters 9 through 14. Or at least that's the plan.
10
right
through
now.
14.
10 through 14. I can
count.
Think. So we're reading chapters 10 through 14 at the moment. We did say we were reading 6 through 10 last time, but
we lied.
We are liars. Yeah.
Happy questing.
Bye.